20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm so excited. It has been far too long. I'm joined once again by the wonderful Perry Goldstein. You can find her, of course, on social media at Perry underscore Goldstein? Question mark? All right, just making sure. And of course,
exclamation point.
And of course, unpacks what she said as well. And then the other one that we love as well, Wisco Grant. You can find him on the Wisco Sports Show. Of course, frequently on the Pack-A-Day Podcast with us as well. Friends, it is so great to be back chatting with you. Like I said, it has been far too long. How the heck are you doing?
Great. I'm doing swell. I'm proud and happy to be the other one to Perry Goldstein's co-hosting ability. So that's perfect. I'm well. How about you, Andy? No one ever asks how you are.
I am doing swell as well. No, it's been a really fun weekend. And no, legitimately, I've been looking forward to this one all day because it has been far too long since we've had the opportunity to chat. And just kind of getting back, like, I love this episode every year because it's such a great way to sort of look back at the offseason and what it's been so far. We go through all of this stuff at warp speed of, you know, you get through some of the coaching changes and then, you know, look at what free agents the Packers could sign and what free agents the Packers did sign. And you get all these different free agents through the course of it. Then you look at what players the Packers could draft and then which ones they did draft. And then all of a sudden you get through and you're like, oh, what the hell just happened again? Like what? And so I think this is like sort of a great way to kind of recap everything, but doing it in a very fun way. So yes, very, very excited for this episode today.
There's I feel like there's a life cycle to all of those things, right? To the draft and to free agency where you get geared up and then it happens and then you analyze and then you move on. So it's nice to be able to look at it all big picture. I agree.
Very much so. Well, we've got a lot of superlatives to get into today. That's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be going through some of the sort of major talking points and superlatives of this offseason. And we'll break it down for you in great detail, which of course we always do. So let's get into it right away. And I want to start with a fun one. To me, the question, first of all, is what is the Packers or what was the Packers, however you want to look at it, biggest offseason storyline? It could be a variety of different things. I don't know who I want to start with. Grant, I feel like you're coming in hot. We're going to go right away with you. What is the Packers' biggest offseason storyline this offseason?
So I don't think that this is the sexiest or the most interesting. Like it's not going to affect betting or fantasy football or like be on any TV shows, but I think the thing that I'm sneaky most interested in right now is the change in philosophy on the O-line. Like they've prioritized athleticism and movement skills, and they haven't necessarily needed their linemen to be big, like people movers for a long time. And paying all that money to Aaron Banks and then drafting Belton in the second round, which if they would have done it later, it'd be one thing, but to take him on day two, it has to signal something. And I'm not exactly sure what it's signaling yet. I had Miner on right after the draft, and I think we talked about schematically some of the things that could lead to, like, they don't just want to run stretch zone all the time. They want to want more power. They want to do more gap or stuff like that. But that's just such a departure from what we got used to in Rodgers' era, right? With these athletic, thin, gifted athletes in space, and they just are getting people the size of cement trucks all of a sudden. So that's really, really interesting to me, and I'm excited to see where it leads and kind of why they are building the O-line a little differently than we've been used to, honestly.
So it's so funny that you say that, because I expected kind of the top conversation point to be here, Jair Alexander, but what I had was the offensive line. I had exactly what you said. And I hear, I think I'm being like all sneaky and be like, I'm going to come in hot. I've got a good one right away. We're going to talk about the changeover in this Packers offensive line. And it's a little bit tough because I don't know exactly what it's going to look like in season yet, right? Like we could get to the season and it very well might just be Rashid Walker. And still Aaron Banks is going to be at left guard and that's going to be a change, but Jenkins and Sean Ryan and Zach Tom, and maybe there's no Anthony Belton. But when you go and you sign your biggest free agent, and it's at the time it was their largest human being on the roster. And that's notable, especially like you said, it's a change in what they've done in the past. And then you're like, maybe that was just a one-off because he is such a great mover as well. And then you get to the draft and in the second round, despite not necessarily having it as a quote-unquote need, you go and you draft another massive human being. Now, outside of Nasir Stackhouse, who they signed an undrafted free agent along the defensive line, was then the largest human being on the roster. And it's like, okay, this is not by accident. This is legitimate and real. And it's really interesting to see like just this change in real time of how they're kind of viewing and, you know, just changing the shape literally of their offensive line. Perry, did you have something different?
Another interesting part of this to me is, when I think I'm a little bit of a place, sorry about the connection again, but it's not like they, like when they signed Banks, their best player on the line at that moment was probably their left guard, which is where Banks is going to play. And then they draft Belton, who probably, it depends on who you ask, but like projects really well at left guard too. So it's not like they're signing massive people to be easy fits. Like they're just collecting massive people, knowing that that's what they want. And they're going to figure it out kind of as they go, as they build this thing. So that's like a further example of how intentional this is. So it's interesting to me. And I'm glad that this also interests you, because I don't know if O-line construction is the sexiest thing to lead the show with.
No, but it's interesting. It's unique. Perry, what did you have, or how do you feel?
I mean, I was just going to say, I wonder if it's just if they already thought of doing this, you know, years ago, because I feel like front offices have things in motion longer than we react to the immediate, but they've been planning things for a while. Or if it's a little bit of like seeing what the Packers run game was like last season and what a weapon it can be, and they're like, okay, we were moving towards this, but now I feel like we have to accelerate it to get that, you know, to optimize what was our the best thing that was happening on our offensive side. Mine was not even remotely related to this. Mine was that the Packers hosted the draft and that it was like incredibly successful, more than successful than anyone thought it would be. I think over 600,000 people were in Green Bay, Wisconsin over the course of the weekend. And by all accounts, I heard it was a fantastic A+ draft. And that's really huge, because Mark Murphy has been planning this for basically his entire tenure as CEO. And even up until this year, people had a lot of reservations about it. So I feel like Green Bay kind of proved that they can play with all the big market teams. And that's really awesome for the town.
It's a beautiful one, and it's perfectly well said. And it probably is, you know, looking at it objectively, probably the biggest offseason storyline for Green Bay is just how successful the draft went and just what an unbelievable event that they were able to host. So I think that's true. And then the only other thing I'll add here is I think probably the offseason storyline that's taken up the most oxygen, whether it be on air, prints, digital, etc., is definitely the Jair Alexander situation.
Oh, we'll get there, Andy. That's probably one of our answers for another one. I'm sure
that will come up on multiple occasions today, but that's probably the one that's taken up the most air as well. But I think all three of these are sort of encompassing of, you know, you've got the off-field, meaning the draft that happened. You had the drama of Jair Alexander, and then you have the on-field implications of Green Bay changing over this offensive line in real time, which I think is, again, very, very intriguing. Let's get to our next one. Biggest off-season surprise. Perry, we'll start with you this time.
So this one was actually one I was having a harder time with, because I don't know if the Packers did anything like largely that shocking this offseason, to be honest. It was like a very like cut and dry draft. And I didn't want to go wide receiver in the first round, because Matthew Golden is a response I have for a later question. I don't think they did anything that surprising. Maybe
you can certainly make that argument,
right? Like they didn't make any splash signings, but that's okay. I mean, you could argue the Aaron Banks, you know, for what it was a really big deal for a guy that was kind of a surprise. But they had a very, very mundane offseason, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It just didn't surprise me that it went that way.
There's nothing shocking. I think that's totally fair. You know, there's a couple ways I could have gone with this. Grant, I'll let you go first. What did you have? And then we'll kind of, I'll you know, follow it up.
Well, I'm glad it's not just me, because I didn't really think there was anything shocking. The bank signing was surprising, though. It's just not very Packers-like to see that much money go for, especially for a guard. You know what I mean? Like, this is a team that hesitates to pay their top tackle who's been there, you know what I mean? Or extend that guy, let alone bring in a guard who's mostly been fine. But it's part of that changing philosophy. But yet it was still a little surprising because they drafted Jordan Morgan in the first round last year, who's fluid, movement space, athlete guy. So it's not even like Aaron Banks was a continuation. It was kind of the first shot over the bow. So not shocking, but that was pretty darn surprising when it happened.
I had that as well. And that certainly was some level of surprising. The amount that he got bringing in a guard, they've never really spent huge money on a free agent guard before. So all of that combined was some level of surprise. But I'm going to go with actually happened early in the offseason. I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. That was Rich Bisaccia's contract extension. I think that one to me was one where it was like, of all the things that could have happened with Rich Bisaccia, like when there was like breaking news about Rich Bisaccia, the thing I was expecting was not contract extension. If you would have told me he retired, I would have been like, okay, I could potentially see that. If you would have told me that Green Bay decided to go in a different direction, I probably could have understood that as well. Probably the last thing I would have expected from that announcement was a contract extension. Now, I've talked about this. I think the separation between Rich Bisaccia, the assistant head coach, and the special teams coordinator is important. I think the assistant head coach has been awesome. I think he brings a different level of coaching and just kind of a different attitude to the entire team. And I do think, you know, we hear all the time, whether it's Keyshawn Nixon, Nate Hobbs, Josh Jacobs, whomever, like just everyone has nothing but unbelievable things to say about Rich Bisaccia. That being said, the special teams has not exactly performed at a stellar level since he's got to Green Bay. I would have assumed, I didn't expect him to get fired, by the way, but I would have assumed that they just kind of would have kept everything status quo, keep him for another season, let him stay on the contract that he's on, and just go with that. But I certainly did not expect an extension.
That's fair. I kind of forgot they did that. So
it happened so early on.
It is one of those situations that it's like, as much as you hear about the guy and how much they love him and that he is right the assistant head coach, so he's like more than just the special teams coordinator, the product on the field is like not reflective of any of that narrative. So, you know, balancing that out is like, well, I'm so glad you all like him, but why are you still in the bottom quarter of special teams?
Pretty easily in the bottom quarter. And we'll see.
I can't get that. I was just to say, I can't get that ending sequence against the Bears out of my mind. Like, how did they not communicate on the sideline? How did they not know McManus's range? Why was the timing? Like, it's special teams coordinator, head coach, assistant head coach right there next to each other. So I'm more concerned with that. And that's stuck in my mind. I know you can look at like the season long special team rankings, but like a moment like that, that's just so concerning to me. And it's not leaving my mind. I'm not forgetting about it.
Yeah, and Rich did talk about, you know, kind of feeling like he let Matt LaFleur and the team down. And I loved his, you know, introspective and just kind of how he was looking at everything. And I think he's overall a value add for the organization. And I'll say it again, I would not have fired him, but I thought the extension was definitely a surprising move this offseason. Let's get to our favorite offseason move. I'm going to kick this one off. I'm going to go with replacing Josh Myers with it ultimately like Elgton Jenkins at center, but really kind of going with Aaron Banks at, you know, going from, you know, him to left guard and then kicking Jenkins to center. To me, you're moving on from your weakest link along the offensive line and really probably on the offense in general and upgrading it to me in a pretty significant way. I still don't know that people are going to quite understand it. If they would have had a real solid center, maybe like a Scott Wells, maybe that's a disservice to Scott Wells, but like a Scott Wells-esque center, and they would have moved on from him and got an all pro, like just one of the best centers in football. I think the distance between like a Scott Wells and an all pro center is the same like distance between Josh Myers and like a solid to good, like left guard slash center. So if Aaron Banks is just solid to good and you've gone on your offensive line from Myers to that, it's the same as going from like a solid center to an all pro, in my opinion. So I think it's going to be a massive improvement along the offensive line.
That was mine too, Andy.
Love it.
In different words, but like just, I really felt like they upgraded the offensive line this offseason. And Green Bay has always had a very solid to range. The range for Green Bay is very solid to one of the best offensive lines in the league. And to your point, the weakest link is no longer on the team, meaning automatically I feel like they're going to be better, especially moving Elgton to center. I am like a little dubious around like the reports coming out that he's a little upset, which I think is fair from like a monetary standpoint on his part. But in terms of like trotting out a best five, they're going to be better. And we've seen how important protection is for Jordan Love. He's like, can be kind of two different quarterbacks depending on whether he can like set his feet appropriately and throw. So if he's fully protected better than last season, then I also imagine that's going to make him play better.
Offensive line and corner are those two positions where the weakest link is magnified. And in my opinion, moving on from Josh Myers and Eric Stokes has removed kind of that weakest link from both of those areas. And it's really going to, I think, make it so that both of those units are a lot better. Grant, how are you feeling about your favorite offseason move?
Well, I'm glad that you compared the O-line and the cornerback room as weak link systems, because my favorite offseason move, I guess, aside from draft picks, which we'll talk about separately, is Hobbs. And it's not super, again, sexy. And no one, or a lot of people at least, didn't know who he was when the move happened. But you're just raising your floor, I think, with him on your roster. I didn't think that corner was a huge issue for them last year. Corner wasn't awesome. They didn't have a bunch of superstars at corner last year. But, they were fine. But bringing in Hobbs, I think, just gives them some insulation if there's an injury. Or if Nixon or somebody regresses, like just knowing that he's there, that's the type of player they didn't have in that room last year. And I just think that's going to be so helpful for them raising their floor. Like you said, like the weakest link just got stronger. And I think that's huge at a position like corner. It's a weak link system, like you said, Andy.
Let's continue on our favorites. We're going to get to some obviously less positive things in a moment here, but I want to stick on the positive note for now. Favorite draft pick. Perry, we'll start with you this time.
Okay. I have two, and I feel like someone else might be able to say more articulate things about the one I kind of want to say. Okay. So I'll just like start with Matthew Golden, and then I'll let somebody else take another one, because I also love the Baron Sorrell pick. But I mean, we have like elephant in the room. They took a wide receiver in the first round, and not just any wide receiver, like one of the top of this class. And I think he, of all the receivers, as I was looking across the board who to pick, he fits the hole that this roster has, in my opinion. There were a lot of guys that I really liked, and they were a bit redundant. And I don't think Matthew Golden is redundant in this offense. And I think he's going to come in and, I mean, he's already ruffling some feathers in that room, which in my opinion is a good thing. It means that you're coming in as a threat. That means people respect your game, and you're already going to be, if that room thinks that he's going to be good, then that's a positive sign, in my opinion. My biggest fear was they would take wide receiver in the first round and he'd be a bust. So I really hope that doesn't happen, but I'm excited to see what this offense can do with like what I believe is a true one. And he's coming into like a perfect fit with Matt LaFleur. So I'll let someone else talk about Matthew Golden if they want, or any of the other picks, but I actually in general really love this draft for them.
I remember last year there was like, I could be misremembering this slightly, but I think different. I know Daniel Jeremiah had Marshawn Lloyd as his top running back. There were multiple analysts who had Adrian Cooper as their top linebacker. I can't remember. I think the other one was maybe Bullard at safety. Like there was another player. Maybe it was Jordan Morgan as the top interior off. There was another player who was like the number one player at their respective position. And then I think technically they got a lot of people's best long snapper in the undrafted free agency as well, but I digress on that. Matthew Golden was once again Daniel Jeremiah's top wide receiver in this draft. So the fact that they were able to get him when they did, and you know, after a couple other wide receivers were taken, even I still think is a huge pick. But Grant, I'll move to you. Who is your favorite pick in this one?
So obligatory Matthew Golden. The pick was awesome, and it's fun, and like it really feels wrong to name anybody else. I am with Perry in that if this guy is a bust, we might be like waiting another 25 years. Like I think of the line from Veep where Amy tells Selena, it's like, you're the reason we're never going to have any other women presidents, because we tried one and she sucked. So like, I hope he doesn't suck, because if he does, it's going to be so long until we get another one. Sneaky draft pick that I like, and again, like, I'm no football expert here, but I should say I'm no like draft prospect college football expert. Colin Oliver really intrigued me, because we seem to be in an era where pass rushers are so like edge rusher coded. They are edge rushers. They are designed to be these huge Nick Perry, Rashawn Gary, like machines coming around the edge. And I watch Colin Oliver. I'm like, oh no, he's a linebacker who can also line up and rush the passer. Like, he feels like a little bit of a throwback. Like, Clay Matthews is, I would never compare him to Clay Matthews, but Clay Matthews was not an edge rusher. He was this badass linebacker who could line up at defensive end and was really good at getting after the quarterback. So, I mean, Clay Matthews was a first round pick for physical measurable reasons, and Colin Oliver wasn't, but it's that prototype. It's that the idea of the player is kind of against what we've gotten so used to when looking for pass rushers. And that intrigues me. No clue if he'll be any good, or I could not possibly predict how good he'll be, but the idea of him compels me. Let's put it that way.
I like that one a lot. He's a really fun player to watch on tape, and just a different flavor of anything that they've had in a really long time. And I think that part is legitimately exciting. I kind of tiered this one a little bit, probably cheating. Matthew Golden is just like the, yeah, obvious answer. We love the pick. There's, yeah, who doesn't, right? And I'm not saying that was no disrespect, but I'm just saying, like, of course, like, obvious, like, everyone loves Matthew Golden.
Whatever.
There's just an opportunity to drag Perry. So that's the only reason I did that. No. The second one I had was Savion Williams, just because I fell in love with him when I was watching the tape more than I ever would have expected. The very first player that I watched in this draft class was Savion Williams, because Justice and I did sort of like a homework assignment of like, hey, next week, let's watch a couple of these players. And he chose Savion Williams. So it was like literally the first player that I watched, and I liked him, but I'm like, yeah, it's not really, you know, like Green Bay's not like I'm going to just draft like a gadget wide receiver sort of. And then the post-draft watch of him earlier in college, where he was just a legitimately good wide receiver, totally changed how I viewed him. And some of the stuff he did was just so freaky. And then I'll just add, like, the third one was somebody that I didn't expect a ton from. And when I threw on the tape, I was just overly excited about, and that was William Brinson. Was not expecting to love that pick very much, as I just kind of watched some of the stuff initially. And then he's one that, like, the more you watch, the more you're like, there is so much attention to detail and little things that he can do that he brings to the table that you may not get at first glance. And I really appreciated that about him. So different tiers of them, but those were kind of the three that I really liked in this draft. Now we have to get to some of the negative stuff, unfortunately. So let's go with biggest remaining area of concern. And Grant, I will start with you.
Well, pass rush. I'm not surprised that they didn't attack pass rush on day one and day two. Maybe a little bit on day two, but I'm not shocked that they didn't address it as heavily as maybe fans wanted, because Goody and the Packers have been telling us for weeks and months, really going all the way back to last year. It's like, no, we actually like the guys that we have. And sometimes when, you know, front office people or coaches say that, it feels like lip service, like they're hyping up their own players, but they say it often enough, and they say it in specific ways, and they fire the coach who was responsible for that group last year. Like, okay, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they feel better about that group. And I think it was either Bill Huber or maybe it was Silverstein who wrote, like, yeah, external perception is not matching how they feel in the building about that group of guys. I felt the same about corner last year. I was like, how did they go into the season with this position group at corner? And then they turned out to be okay, right? They weren't awesome, but they were fine. I worry that this pass rush is going to look a lot like it was last year, and it's really difficult for the rest of the defense to be that good. It's hard to have an impact at corner or at safety in the same way that you can have a direct impact as a pass rusher. And I just worry that could limit the ceiling of the defense. So I'd say pass rusher, but it's not an unfamiliar spot. I felt the same way about corner last year. And I think the Packers were one way or another vindicated. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were vindicated again this season.
Fingers crossed. Perry, what about you?
I feel like I understand the comparison, because those are the two areas. Like, mine is cornerback depth still, but I feel like they're hard comparisons, because as we saw, like, you can get by on the kind of like rotation and like excellent safety play, right, of that like back end of the defense. I think it's maybe I'll eat my words on this, but like a little bit easier to like cover up with scheme Whereas, like, I feel like if the Packers, I'm with you, Grant, if the Packers don't have good pass rush, like, there is nothing covering that up. Like, you're just not getting to the quarterback, and that's it. And to your point, you're making everything a lot harder. So to me, it's like, one, you can work around, and one, there's just, it's very black and white. So I'm still a little concerned as well, because they didn't really add like a established edge rusher that you're like, okay, he's going into the rotation. You know, he's getting a majority of snap, or like a, you know, high volume of snaps, and like, he's going to go and like pair with Rashawn Gary. They're really banking still on a leap from the guys they have on their roster. That wasn't actually the one that I chose. Mine was still cornerback depth, but I think it's probably a better one to talk about, because cornerback depth, to the point we both just made, like, it, they can work something out with the guys that they have on their roster, even if they trade Jair Alexander.
I had cornerback depth as one of mine as well. And then the other, and I've talked about it way too much probably already, is, and Justice and I have talked about this a ton, of just what happens if Kenny Clark goes out injured for any period of time. I really struggle with, you know, you have no TJ Slayton anymore. Kenny Clark would be hurt in that situation. And now it's like, even though I just talked about really liking him, you're at William Brinson and Nasir Stackhouse as your kind of run stuffing defensive tackles. Cause Wyatt's not a great run defender. Wooden's not a great run defender. Brooks isn't a great run defender. And now you just get really kind of thin in that interior of the defensive line. Like, even just with Slayton out, as much as I like Brinson, I still think that's a little bit of a concern as well. And you just don't have another type in there that can kind of clog some of those holes. And as Justice put eloquently, if Kenny Clark goes down, like, and hopefully if it would happen, it would happen before the trade deadline, like, you're just going to have to make a move at that spot, because you don't really have a player on the roster as is right now to kind of fill that. And I mean, you could say that if this person gets injured in a lot of different ways, Rashawn Gary would be a huge issue. Clearly Jordan Love would be a huge issue. You certainly don't have another Josh Jacobs or Xavier McKinney on the team. Like, we could talk about that a lot, but I really would struggle with what that run defense looks like if Kenny goes down for any period of time.
It's so fair.
All right. The next negative one. Least favorite offseason move from the Packers. Anyone want to start this one?
Grant?
Least favorite offseason move. It feels like a cop-out. It feels like a cop-out because I already used this one, but I didn't love the Banks thing. That's what teams do when they're struggling to build an O-line or to draft and develop it. An O-line. And I don't think the Packers are struggling to draft and develop an O-line. So I guess if you have the money, there's way worse ways to spend it than on O-line. Or it would be worse to maybe not spend it at all if you feel like your team has needs. But it's not a massive complaint. I'm not losing sleep over it. But it did not feel true to form for the Packers. And their form at O-line has felt very successful. And that's been borne out in the results over the years. So I didn't really love that, but I don't think it's some ridiculous move. It just wasn't my favorite.
Perry, did you have a thought on that, or did you have a different direction? I want to follow up on that if you are.
You can just answer that, because I couldn't really think of that much for this one. There was nothing that they did that I was like, that was egregiously wrong.
Here's what I would say. I don't hate the Banks contract, and I'm actually legitimately looking forward to seeing what he can do at left guard. If you gave me the choice between Aaron Banks at 4 years, $77 million, Mekhi Becton at 2 years, $20 million, or taking a flyer on Tevin Jenkins, the former second-round pick from the Bears, for 1 year, $3 million, the Banks is the last one of those that I probably take. And I'm willing to, because you don't have this like major need at the position, right? Like, you can probably figure it out. Like, if you needed to go this season, Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan, Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom, you could have done so. Now, you needed depth, no question about it. And I love the fact that they addressed it. I love the fact that they brought somebody in free agency and took a second round pick. I don't dislike either of those things. But for my money, and it's not my money and it's not my decision, but I would probably have rather had Mekhi Becton at 2 years, $20 million, or even Tevin Jenkins on a flyer, 1 year, $3 million, before I go all in on Aaron Banks at 4 years, $77 million.
That's very interesting.
if that makes any sort of sense whatsoever. And again, you pay for what you get. So, you know, I do think Banks is the best of those three, but I don't think it's that much better. I think that's still a pretty like large jump in pay for maybe what's not as large of a jump in actually productivity out on the field. Just that's how I would define it. But again, I'm not upset by it. I don't like dislike it. It's not one that I look at and like, oh my God, what are they doing here? Like, I see the vision. He's a big guy. You can move. You can look at every free agent move like Aaron Banks and every draft pick in Belton and look at what money you could have spent elsewhere and look at what draft pick you could have potentially spent at that point in time and say, man, that would have been more fun. Jack Besh was out there. Trey Harris was out there at wide receiver. There's a variety of different people that you could have, you know, maybe put in that situation and like, it would have been much more fun. It would have been maybe a better draft pick. That's going to happen anytime you get a big guy like that. And at some point, if you always do that, you're going to end up with no big guys on your offense, like no physical power on your offensive line, especially guys like that who can move. So it might feel a little bit underwhelming in the moment, but those guys don't come along very often. And when you have the opportunity to add them to your roster, it's usually good for business.
And there's a chance that contract like ages well. And in 2 years, we're like, remember when we were freaked out? So that's a thing with contracts too. I do wonder how much of that Eagles game is sticking in the mind of Gutekunst, which I know general managers and front offices are not supposed to do. You're not supposed to overreact to one game or a performance, but you know, sometimes the athletes that are good in space can just get their butts whooped by bigger, stronger human beings. And it kind of feels like that's what happened against the Eagles. So I don't think Goody's overreacting to one game, but I think it would be wild to at least, you know, ignore the idea that maybe he's like, yeah, we can't get manhandled like that again. And Banks and Belton are both part of that.
But maybe overreacting to one game, like leave them to like make the right decisions. Like I think about the Chiefs after the Super Bowl where their O-line got like absolutely manhandled as well. And then they went out and got like an entirely new O-line. Right. Yeah. And it made a huge difference. So you don't want to, I mean, I'm sure that was a culmination also of an entire season of watching that, but sometimes it just means you need the push over the ledge to make a right decision.
And by the way, I'm fine overreacting. I would overreact to everything if I was in charge. You just typically don't see that from general managers. They say they don't want to do this.
That's your whole job. It's overreacting.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. I actually do not have an answer for this one, which never, ever happens. So I'm hoping that one of you guys has an answer to this one. Is there an offseason move that you wish the Packers would have made? Anyone?
No, because I am normally of the mind of like, I mean, we just got off the Aaron Banks conversation, so sorry, but like not overreacting and overpaying in free agency. And like I think a lot of people are making the argument that Aaron Banks was just that, but I think in general they didn't. Like, I'm glad they didn't trade for DK Metcalf. I'm glad they didn't overpay for, you know, another like a corner that was on the market that like wasn't really going to be like DJ Reed. Like, who wasn't like I? So I'm with you, Andy.
There were a couple. I could have easily talked myself into a 1 year, $10 million deal for Darius Slay if you're going to move on from Jair Alexander as like another outside corner that you could add to the team. I even could talk myself maybe into a pretty cheap deal for Calais Campbell as just like another big body, even though he's like 1,000 years old. He's still really good. And I could have talked myself into a pretty cheap contract for him just to add a little bit of, again, size, physicality, and just, you know, veteran acumen along that defensive line. Maybe somebody who can, you know, add the or raise the level to some of those younger guys as well. I probably could talk myself into of like, I wonder what it really would have taken to get Trey Hendrickson, and maybe you don't do the bank steal so you have the money for him, and maybe you don't have like, if you spent 2 fourth and fifth round picks on, you know, edge defenders, like, you know, if you don't sign Banks, you send a fourth and a fifth and maybe a little bit something else. Could you have gotten Trey Hendrickson and then had a much, you know, a more intriguing player? We fixed that pass rush issue. There's a couple of ways that I could have gone, but usually I love to like Monday morning quarterback this thing and be like, well, if they did this and they could have done this and look at all these different things that they could have done. And I just looked at this free agent class, some of the draft capital that it took to go get players like DK Metcalf. And there wasn't one offseason move where I'm like, I cannot believe this team got this guy for this price or whatever. It was a pretty high priced free agent group. You had to overpay if you wanted to really go shopping. And what Green Bay did overall, I was cool with. So there was nothing that stood out to me.
Well, that's you're talking about
Andy not having an answer.
Not having a good answer is maybe better. Like not having a logical, like this is the guy that they should have gotten answer.
You're acting like, by the way, the Trey Hendrickson thing is dead and gone and in the past. There's still fruit on that content tree for those who are bold enough to go picking. I think Cincinnati will ultimately pay him because Cincinnati is the type of organization, and Dallas is the same way, where it's like, well, we're going to pay you all along, but we're just going to drag our feet and make this worse for everyone and more expensive and then do it anyway, because that's what bad franchises do. But I do wonder if Cincinnati was like, well, he'll show up and he'll be fine. And now he's there and it's not fine. So like, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm not letting that die, but also the summer is a quiet time and the Brewers look like they might not be very good. So as long as Trey Hendrickson is talking to reporters and seems unhappy, I'm going to keep the porch light on for that point of conversation.
Fair enough. Did you have any other answer, Grant, of like anything you would have done?
No, I really wanted DK Metcalf. I mean, I want everything all the time, but now looking back, it's like, so they gave up that and paid a bunch of money, and maybe it's the Steelers, right? Because like, okay, but what else do they have going for him? Like they traded away George Pickens, who was supposed to be the guy to compliment him. So no, I don't think DJ Reed to the Lions didn't seem like an outrageous deal to me. I thought that was a deal that a lot of people loved. So maybe, but then they got Hobbs. So I don't know. That's not one that I'm going to lose sleep over, but maybe if I could think of a player who signed for a little less than I thought, that would be one. But the Packers signed another corner, so I'm not going to lose sleep over that.
Love it. Let's go back to some more positive ones. Who are you most excited about going into this season? Doesn't have to just be an off-season move. Can be anyone that was previously on the team, can be a free agent, a draft pick, just somebody that you're most excited about going into the year.
I have too many answers for this.
I'll start, and I'll be lame and cliche and basic on this one. Nice. I'm just excited to watch Jordan Love. I like legitimately really want to see what Jordan Love is. I still think he's a really good quarterback. I haven't really wavered in that at all. We had so many injuries for Jordan a season ago that it was just so tough to glean what was real, what was fake, how much did the injuries play a part, how much did the missed practice time play a part. And I legitimately believe that this is going to be like the season that defines Jordan, whether that's like a top 10 quarterback, top 5 quarterback, somewhere in the middle, or if like what we saw last year was a little bit more real. And I think it's the former. I think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. He might be just already just by definition, but I'm really just excited to see him hopefully take another step and or anything, just kind of get what I think is going to kind of be a final answer of like, who is he?
Final answer.
I just don't think in year 7 you're going to get anything different that you probably get. Like, this is his third year as a starter, his sixth year in the league. Like, you're probably just who you are at this point. But, and I think that maybe would have been closer to the answer in year 5 as well, save for we just never saw the real Jordan Love. So I do think like this is the season defining, I guess, just definition of what Jordan Love is.
Yeah. I have that. So mine are ranked. So I'm just going to do a little New York mayoral race and give you my ranked choice options.
Is there a mayoral race in New York going on?
June.
Oh, wow.
So it's on the brain. The New York City mayor. I had that, Andy, as very high. Just like what Jordan Love looks like fully healthy in 2025. I also had Matthew Golden and his impact, which fair enough. But I think what's actually like standing out to me more, so maybe this will be a fun topic, is like, I'm really excited about Jeff Hafley's defense in year 2. I think what he did last season, like, flew really under the radar because the stats at the end of the season were really good, the top 10. So he's got more players that are his choice, right? He had a say in the draft again. So now the defense is kind of turning over into like his image. He's got a few like potential stars. Edge Cooper is like, you know, that asterisk there of like, you know, a star that are percolating in there. And I think if he comes back out with another top 10 defense and you get a healthy Jordan Love, like, that's that's a recipe for a very successful season.
I love that answer a lot. I'm very much looking forward to that as well. Grant, what do you got?
So I want to say Matthew Golden, just because like some of these answers are very easy, right? Like we're not shattering anyone's world with some of these answers. But I will, as my answer being Matthew Golden, I'll answer my Matthew Golden answer with another name. I'm actually really excited to see Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks in year three, right? I think for the same reason you're excited to see Jordan Love. He's the quarterback and he's on the marquee and he drives the whole thing. But I still have a ton of belief in those guys. And I've never really stopped believing, although last year was frustrating. It just wasn't an option for them to go into this year with Reed and Wicks' development as the only plan, right? Like it just wasn't tenable, because if you get into next season and Wicks still can't catch and Reed has inconsistencies, then you're porked. You're right back where you were last year, you know, maybe save for healthy Jordan Love, but a healthy knee for Jordan Love doesn't make Dontavian Wicks catch the ball, right? It doesn't fix some of the other things. So I think Matthew Golden is massive and I'm super excited to watch him, but I don't think he alone, especially as a rookie, can just fix all of the issues they had last year. And I'm really still excited about Wicks and Reed, even though it's maybe taking a year or two too long, or maybe they never get there. But I'm really excited to watch those two specifically in year three, because I think it'll be kind of their penultimate year two, just like it is for Jordan Love.
Dontavian Wicks could catch the first pass of the season, throw it 90 yards backwards for a safety, and I'm still not selling my Dontavian Wicks stock. No, like there's nothing that you could possibly get me to do to sell my stock in Dontavian Wicks. So, no, I'm all in still. I don't think, and I joked with somebody the other day of like, if it could be like 15 years from now and Dontavian Wicks is playing in like some arena football league, and I'm going to be like, there's still something there. Some team should pick him up. Just get him in. He's just going to get open. So catch the ball this year, but I'm still there with you. I'm not selling my stock. All right. We all went for most excited going into the season, right? Yes, we did. All right. What are you most nervous about going into the season? I'll start with this one. It's something we discussed already, so I don't need to go about it long. It just, the pressure, there are no Super Bowl winning teams that can't get significant pressure on the quarterback. It's just a prerequisite to being a great team. And I'm not saying you have to be top one or top three or top five, but you've got to be pretty damn close and you've got to be able to get some pretty consistent pressure, usually with four guys. And I'm still not quite there right now. And I'm hoping new defensive line coach, you know, hopefully some jumps from LVN and Devontae Wyatt. Maybe these rookies can provide something, but just still very nervous about it.
Yeah. I'm most nervous about the division. I think they're in the best division in football again. I know the Lions had a brain drain and the Vikings are having a new quarterback, so there's like a lot of question marks. I didn't mention the Bears because, you know, whoever knows what's happening with the Bears, but it's still going to be a very competitive division. And the Packers really struggled against their division opponents last season. And I like to think, because it's my team and I'm an optimist, that they will be better this coming season, right? I think there's going to be more tape on the Lions and they have all new, you know, basically everyone under Dan Campbell is new. Like I said, JJ McCarthy is starting for the Vikings, but Kevin O'Connell is still a very good coach. And I just think I really would like to see them come out strong week one against what's now their biggest rival, because you can talk all you want about like, you know, iron sharpens iron and blah, blah, blah. But like being first in the division and being third in the division is a humongous difference when you're going into playoffs, whether you have home field advantage, who you play, et cetera. And I think if they want to make a push, like they need to focus on winning the division this season.
The NFC North is predicted to have the most wins of any division, and that's despite it having a ridiculously hard schedule all throughout the entirety of the NFC North. So just goes to show you how good that division really is, or at least expected to be going into this year. Grant, what about you?
I love the answer of the division. That's a classic zig when everyone is going to be zagging. So I like that. On the Lions, they need to win week one. They have not beaten the Lions at Lambeau since 2021. And that's an insane thing because
I was at that game with Andy.
What was that?
I was at that game with Andy.
Oh, And that was the one with, there was an onside kick at the end and they still almost.
No, it was some, close. Yes.
Yeah. It was still nerve wracking. Yeah.
There was some madness at the end. So just for reference, I was 17 years old when the Lions won that game at Lambeau. It was the first time in my life it had ever happened. Because I think the previous time was 93. Like it had been this insane streak of them not being able to win in Green Bay. And I went a large portion of my life without it ever happening. So just getting back on track against the Lions and just notching one and getting a pelt on the wall there is huge. I think I'm most concerned about Jordan Love. It's not that I don't believe in him. It's just that I think there's a reasonable, realistic outcome this year where he is inconsistent, has great throws, has bad throws, doesn't fall back on his mechanics as often as he should. And it's just kind of the same guy. And they can win with that guy. But I think there's a realistic possibility this year that he just never looks like this, like dialed in quarterback every snap, every play, like we saw in the second half of his rookie year. And it wasn't just the injuries last year. So I'm not saying I would bet on it, but that's my concern, because if that happens, then it kind of recontextualizes every other thing we're talking about.
There's certainly nothing more important, right? Like, and if something did go wrong or it just didn't, you know, meet expectations, that's definitely one of the worst case scenarios, is that just Jordan is not as good as we thought he was going to be. And again, I'm with you. I don't think that's going to be the case, but that there certainly is at least some level of nervousness of like, what if, like, what if it's just not what we expected? And then that would really, I think, kind of reset things a little bit, or at least kind of make you rethink about the way things are a little bit. So don't think it's going to be the case, but I can totally see where you're coming from. All right, we're going to go these last few, just kind of lightning round. Biggest remaining mystery.
Is Jair going to be on the roster or not?
A lot of oxygen on
it. I had to.
What else are you going to do for this one, right? It's the most obvious one too, but I don't know what else you would talk about. Grant, do you have something different?
I mean, the mystery, when you, the word mystery is exactly what this Jair thing is. Like every report gets me to switch how I previously felt about it. The wildest, not a report, but the wildest thing in this whole saga is Jeff Hafley, who would read you the phone book at his press conference if you asked, gave the brief answer on Jair. Like he
would give an answer.
Yeah. He'll spill his guts over everything. And he gave us the company line. I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard that before. So that's how you know that this thing is weird. It's a mystery. It's a pure mystery. I don't know if anything else on the team or on the roster even comes close.
And then a couple of days later, the defensive backs coach, Derek Ansley, says, oh yeah, I talk to him every morning. And so
nothing makes sense.
Like Jeff Hafley literally won't be like wants to pretend the guy doesn't exist. Like I don't even want to talk about that. We're not talking about hypotheticals. It's like, it's not a hypothetical. He's literally on the roster. He's the very first guy listed. You pull up, go to Packers.com, pull up the roster. Number one guy on there, Jair Alexander. Like that's not a hypothetical. He's there right now. He's contracted on the team. And then
it's a very Jair way to go out, to be quite honest, to just confuse the heck out of everybody and then be like, peace.
And like, well, you can't even like game it out to be like, oh, I wonder who's gaining leverage by this. It's like, there's nobody. Like, none of it makes sense. It's so bizarre. It's so
this
weird.
Is what's wild is 2 weeks ago on my show, I made a timeline, like all the way back to the combine when Goody first spoke. And then like every report that's happened. And I'm like, well, if we just like, I'm trying to color code, like I'm trying to find anything. And it's like the Pepe Silvia scene from Always Sunny. Like you can try to connect it.
I was just about to say, you are that meme.
Yeah. So it's entertaining. I would thought at this point in mid-May that we'd have some sense of direction and idea of where it's going, but we just don't. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of fun because most things in sports, we get a report every single day. And this thing is, it's like the wind. It comes and goes and it never really seems to make sense.
And the weirdest thing is like, this has every reason to be very like, there could be a lot of vitriol and hatred between both sides and just be like, ah, and yet it feels like there's like this weird connective tissue between them where like Matt LaFleur is telling Schrager, like, yeah, actually things are much better than you would expect. And like, then Derek Ansley's like, yep, talk to him every morning, give him a, you know, piece of good news or a word of advice every single morning. And it's like, what is going on? I don't understand.
Text all the draft picks. Welcome to Green Bay.
Nate Hobbs, like, you, yeah. You know, hey, welcome to the team. Like,
they're all like, yeah, I heard from Jair. It's like, what?
Working out with Xavier McKinney. And then there's like, you know, Josh Jacobs with Kay Adams, where it looks like he's about to say like whatever team he ends up on, and then like cuts himself off mid-sentence because he realized what he's about to say. Like, I don't know. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I don't know that I've ever, and we've gone through some Rodgers stuff, some Favre stuff, and like this is even on a different level than that, I feel like. All right. player that you can't wait to watch in preseason? I'm going Marshawn Lloyd.
So that was gonna be my answer. Assuming they play him. I was gonna say Marshawn Lloyd, but I don't know how many snaps they're gonna give him. So I assume he's gonna get a little run. I just want to see what he looks like. I don't know if he's good. I don't even know if he's that important for the team. I'm just curious to see.
I think he's gonna be good, and I think he's gonna have a legitimate role. Not like, you know, Josh Jacobs is gonna be the guy, but I think he'll have a legit role on the team. And I do think he's gonna be very good. But like you said, like, I guess maybe if they're just treating him like a crash test dummy of like, if he gets hit, like things are just going to explode, then maybe they don't give him much run in the preseason, but I think they will. I think they want him to get better at pass pro. I think they want to see what he can do, see if he can stay healthy and carry the load a little bit. I think he'll definitely get time there. Perry, what do you got?
That works.
All right. That works. Last but not least, player and or storyline that's not getting enough buzz and or attention.
I actually think about this a lot, and it's like, if you listen to Pex, which she said, it's a major talking point on our show, which is like, there's some contracts that need to get sorted out in 2025, and they're kind of major decisions. And it's a little tougher now with the Christian Watson injury, but like, they have to decide on him and Romeo Doubs's contract. Like, they have to figure out like Quay and Wyatt, and like, there are some like legit decisions that are going to be made this season. And I just feel like not enough people are talking about it.
I like that answer a lot. Grant, what do you got?
I was going to say Doubs too. Something that I brought up on my show last week is, it's very clear if you listen to the coaches' pressers and the assistant coaches too, not just the coordinators, but all the way down to position coaches, they're just obsessed with competition. Yeah, we want to get a look at all these guys at this position. And we want these young guys to get in there. Like, they're screaming from the hilltops that we want everyone competing for their job, which is good. They should want that. Like, you should always be trying to replace everyone and get cheaper. But the Packers have been really bold about it publicly. And I don't think that's the only reason why Jenkins is looking at his deal and Jaden Reed is concerned about his role, but I think it might be a part of it. Like, I think they put a lot of players and position groups on notice with what they did this offseason, and probably with good reason, because some of those position groups weren't good enough, but that can rock the boat a little bit. And I think we've seen that a bit. So I'm with you, Perry. Contract adjacent stuff, or players coming up on a contract, or how things got a little weird with Doubs last year. Another angle to that story as well.
All right, I'm going to go with, we talk about this 2023 draft in a lot of different ways of like, LVN's got to have a big breakout this year. And what is Jaden Reed after his slow second half of last season? Can Tucker Kraft make a big jump? Like Dontavian Wicks, like, are we still, you know, buying the stock in Wicks, or is he just going to continue to drop the ball? What can Carl Brooks and Carrington Valentine be in their third seasons? But I feel like of all the players that we really don't touch base on a ton, like Luke Musgrave is one that's kind of just gone a little bit under the radar. And he had 7 catches last year for 45 yards. 7 catches for 45 yards, 0 touchdowns. A
he
6
was
point
hurt all season.
Well, let's refresh that a little bit. He was absolutely hurt. And I totally get what you're saying. He's been hurt for 2 years now. But yeah. Luke Musgrave played last year in, I think it was 7 games. If I want to double check here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games. He played in 8 games, 7 of which he received double-digit snaps in. And like, still overall, I'm not saying this is a ton, but had 160 snaps on offense. And within that, only caught 7 passes for 45 yards. And it was like, if there was something else that he was like, well, he's a really good run blocker. Well, he's not. If he was a really good pass protector, but he's not. So like, he's got to be a receiving weapon in order to make that work. And I just don't know that we're now going into year 3. And yes, very large part due to injuries over his first 2 seasons. It's so funny how like, some people get a complete pass on injuries and others are like, this guy's injury prone and he totally sucks. And I don't think either of them are necessarily correct. I'm not saying one way is better than the other. I hate this guy's injury prone and he totally sucks, but it's like Christian Watson will be out for 2 weeks and it's like, oh my God, I can't stand this guy. And like Musgrave misses a bunch of time and it's like, well, he's just been a little bit banged up and he's going to be able to come back and have a big, you know, it's like, how do we define this stuff? It's the weirdest thing, but just what is Luke Musgrave in year 3? And I really like the player. I loved him coming out. I think he's super talented, but I think the on the field product, not even including the injuries, the on the field product when in the games so far over 2 years has been underwhelming. And I just want to see it kind of take that step and hopefully be a little bit better in year 3, which takes time usually for tight ends. So hopefully this is the year.
You're right. He's the only player who could miss the majority of the first 2 years and underperform in the games that he played and still get discussed like a rookie going into the season. It's like, well, you start with a healthy Luke Musgrave again this year. It's like, this is his third season.
Yeah.
Well, I threw you a softball there, Andy. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. This is why we work together so well.
I know. All right. It was planned all along, guys.
This was a ton of fun. I always love chatting with you guys, and it's just kind of fun to kind of look back at the off season that was and kind of look at it in a variety of different ways. I think that's it for our you know, sort of superlatives for today. But Perry, what do you got cooking? Is Maggie just being lazy again? Like, oh, I'm going to have a kid. Now she's not going to do PAX. It's like, well, when are we getting some more PAX, what she said?
Yeah, PAX, what she said, is on maternity leave right now. Unacceptable. So if you do not know, Maggie did just have a child, Andy. It's her second little girl. She's adorable. She has big cheeks.
Get her on the pod. Get her on the
I
pod.
Love her. So yes, we'll be back at some point, but we are giving Maggie some well-deserved mom time. So we will be back for like probably the start of OTAs and things like that. But you know, Andy, if you want to come on the show and do a little F with me, then we can give the people some content. But yes, for now, the regular shows are on maternity leave.
Anytime, simply because I got to try to stay ahead of Dusty, Nagler, Tom Grassi, those guys is like the most, you know, appearances on PAX, what she said. So I'm just trying to run up the numbers as best I can.
Fine. I'll take it.
Deal. Maggie, while I disagree with you getting any time off ever, I hope you're doing awesome and you're the best. So enjoy your time off. Grant, what do you got cooking?
Well, it's going to be a big week. Bill is going on vacation, so I'll be doing the 10 to 2 show and then my normal thing, 4 to 6 at night. Probably not a lot to talk about the Brewers, so a lot of Packers stuff. And this is the week that Favre documentary is coming out, which right. I'm very intrigued by. I don't like sports documentaries. Like, I'll just watch the games, and if I'm not watching the games, I will do something else. I normally don't get into them. This one interests me because the people at front office are really, 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 really good at this type of stuff. So I'm probably going to talk about that a little bit this week because I don't expect a ton of Packers or Brewers news. So I think I'm excited to talk about that this week on the show. And you can find my show. Just find my Twitter at Wisco Grant. And that's the best way to find where the show is on.
Bill's taking off.
You mentioned the Brewers twice now. So I'm just going to like take a moment and say, let's go, Mets. We have an amazing record.
Pete Alonso get a, no, it wasn't Pete Alonso. It was Juan Soto get embarrassed at the plate.
Whatever. We have like, we're tied for the best record in the NL right now. So you can't say nothing to me.
Well, we got shut out 4 times in 5 games. So the best ball is yet to come. Your October is going to be our month and not May. So how about that?
May's been brutal. That is for sure. What is with Bill Michaels taking off? Maggie's taking off. Do people just not do this 365 days a year? Is that, I didn't know that was an option. I was not aware that that was an option, that you didn't have to do this every single day. Interesting. Noteworthy. You guys are the best. Follow her at @Perry_Goldstein, actually over here at @Perry_Goldstein. Follow him down there at Wisco Grant. You can find me at @AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.